All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our MLB podcast for Thursday, May 11th. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis.
And we're from Daily Fantasy Sports Rankings here to break down a shorter Thursday in baseball. It's still a little too soon for me to talk about our Tuesday podcast where we absolutely crushed it and then lost our audio file in the last, I would say, 30 seconds when our...
Oh, yeah, you're right about to just to drop the final beat and then call it
a day. And then Dropbox trolled me pretty hard this morning sending me the recovered audio file. So we could have had it, but it just was 2 days late. So
that's a nice, nice bluff by you, by the way. Hopefully no one calls you on it, and then you'll have to send them the file to prove it. But
I can send you a screenshot of the file, although you named yourself a weird thing in the file, so it would be confusing for me. All right, Thursday.
Well, today I named myself Crash Davis, which I feel like is kind of proof that that indeed I did crash the last time, so...
Yeah, it took me a solid 3 hours to get over that. Anyway, we'll get into Thursday baseball today. Interesting day today. There are some named pitchers going, although no one's in a particularly good matchup, and that's kind of not throwing things off, but making things I think look a little bit weird on the lineup side. We have a game in Coors, obviously, although there's some decent pitchers going there, and that can throw things off as well. So plenty to get into here for a Thursday in baseball with only six or seven games in the evening slate. We're going to kind of skip by the two 1 p.m. games because I suspect that by the time most people listen to this, those games will have been played. Actually, I don't really like that slate anyway. Just two games of just nothing really standing out on either side of the ball to get too excited about. So we'll skip the 1 o'clock and get right to the 7 o'clock games. So we have some decent arms going today, each with varying levels of either bad matchup or being a little bit overpriced. There's a few names that kind of stand out to me, and it's going to be a night where I think you're going to see some ownership percentages sort of all over the place as people work their way to talking themselves either in or out of some of these names. The first guy that kind of jumps out to me here is Pineda. Pineda, well, how much does it worry you when you see a guy going up against a team like Houston who is, I mean, they're a legit offense, but we get Pineda on a little cheap maybe because of it. I mean, does it scare you just when you see a guy like Pineda who's coming in, not in all the lineups, but in a decent amount right now when we run optimals for FanDuel and DraftKings? Does it scare you when you see that kind of matchup?
Well, yeah, I mean, the thing is, it does scare me quite a bit. And what it tells me is that this is going to be a lineup or a slate that I'm going to take a hard look at whether I want to actually play it or not, because I saw it there and I immediately wanted to disagree with it or find some problem with it. And then as I looked through some of the other guys, I had a great deal of difficulty doing that. I will say, I mean, just on the surface, the Astros, the third highest WOBA against righties this season, the third fewest strikeouts against righties. So, like, they're about as bad a matchup as you can conceive of for a right-handed pitcher. And it's a bad hitter's park, or a good hitter's park, rather, bad for pitchers in New York. So I'm not feeling great about this at all. I mean, what's the case for Pineda?
The case for Pineda is he has been awesome this year, right? So and this is following a 2016 campaign where there were a lot of signs that he was a lot better than he struggled with ERA last year, like up in the high fours. He was just a DFS sort of like, just like a cartoon because like people kept waiting for him to be good and he would just get blown up game after game, it seemed like.
But why were we waiting for him to be good? Let's clarify.
Because he has two things really going for him. One is he has a close to elite level strikeout rate. So last year it was 10.6. This year it's 11.1 Ks per nine. That's over. So you're looking at around 11 Ks per nine over the last 200 innings. That's just a real number, right? That's just what he probably is going to be doing, probably going forward, I would suspect. So you get that elite K. This year he's basically cut his walks in half. So last year it was like 2.7 walks per nine. Now it's 1.3. So even more, he cut them even more in half. He ran a little bad on BABIP this year. This year he's running a little good. So you maybe just chop that up in the middle. Overall though, 2.41 XFIP this season after a 3.3 last year. Those numbers are just good, right? Those are just very, very good numbers. And when you take a look at him as compared to some of the other names on the slate, so maybe he's in the same category as some of these other guys, but he's also just coming significantly cheaper. So like he's coming, in this case, he's coming at like something like 2,000 less than Keuchel, 2,000 less than Greinke. I think when you combine the peripherals and the price, it's starting to make up for the very bad matchup in Houston, which I recognize is bad, if that makes sense.
Oh, for sure. Well, that's where I think ultimately we have to land on Pineda, because I think just in a strict his skill as a pitcher and the matchup, you would not take him. Like, I would not personally probably take him heads up over a guy like Greinke or maybe even Gerrit Cole. And I'll explain why in a second. But yeah, I think that when you take into account the price, taking the fact that he has, I mean, it's really been 3 years of this kind of solid upward trajectory. Still pretty young at age 28. And obviously, you know, that 2015 season, he was still battling through injury. So, yeah, I think Pineda's good. But, man, I'll tell you what, like, let's break down XFIP for a second, because, you know, this is something I think I talked about on one of our Lost podcasts recently, thanks to our new software that we've been using. I won't disparage them because their owner's been nice about trying to help me troubleshoot it. But so XFIP, you know, the difference between XFIP and FIP basically is adjusting for home run to fly ball ratio. That's, I mean, there's some other subtle differences as well, but that's a major one. And so if you're not a baseball sabermetrician, and I don't expect that you need to be to play DFS baseball, basically, pitchers, generally speaking, tend to normalize around, say, like 10% home runs to fly balls. So for every 10 fly balls hit, one of those turns into a home run. And this is kind of a quick and dirty rule, much in the same way BABIP, or batting average on balls in play, is a quick and dirty rule that kind of tends to normalize around 300. The thing is, it doesn't always work that way for all pitchers. And Pineda, I mean, he struggled with a high home run to fly ball ratio throughout his career. And some pitchers, like, you know, based on certain counts or based on the type of contact they give up, you know, Pineda's always had excellent control. So, you know, perhaps he stays in the zone a little bit too often, allowing batters to make hard contact. I'm not really sure what the issue is, but Pineda has always struggled with a high BABIP and always struggled with a high home run to fly ball ratio. And I think that hard contact really does hurt him. I think maybe it actually winds up hurting him in this series, and I don't know that I feel super, super excited about playing him against Houston. I'm actually going to look at the inputs when we're off here. Not that he's a bad play, and especially on DraftKings where you have to roster two pitchers, he's pretty palatable to me, but it's not like he's a heavy favorite either, you know? I mean, and I get that he's cheap. This is all, right, you know, in adjustment to the price, but man, a minus 117 favorite in a game with a 7.5 total just isn't really that impressive. I don't know, like, I might just not play tonight's slate because of how sick I feel over the pitching here, but I don't know. I just don't feel over the moon here.
No, I'm with you too, and this is not an over the moon feeling. And if there was really anybody, like if there would have been five guys going from last night that would have been made lineups over Pineda tonight, like pretty easily,
okay,
right? Like,
yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Like, so, like last night, if any one of, say, Archer, Maeda, Darvish, not probably Strasburg. I mean, those three are the ones I remember, like, off the top of my head. Any one of those three guys, if they were pitching tonight, would be the clear-cut cash game favorite in this case. It's, they just happened to pitch last night, not tonight. So I think that's the other thing, too. Like, these are all relative things. Like, that they're speaking only on relative terms about these are only the options. We don't have any other options beyond these guys. Now, there are a couple other name arms going here. Is there, you know, let's say you wanted to, you didn't feel great about Pineda, rightfully so. Who else is in a, at least like an above average spot here, or even average, because Pineda's probably in an average to below average spot here. One more thing about Pineda. One thing that does help him here, besides the price and some of the peripherals, is that Yankee Stadium is much more forgiving to lefty power than it is to righty, and the Astros have much more on the righty side of their, like, they're solid hitters. I mean, they have Reddick heading second, but Springer, Correa, Altuve, Gattis, those guys are all coming from the right side of the plate. So that helps them a little bit, though.
Okay, you said the opposite thing at the beginning. So you're saying that it's a lot more forgiving if you're up against right-handed batters, is what you're saying?
Sorry, yeah, correct. It's forgiving for the lefty side of the power. I was speaking about two sides of that power coin. Yes, it's better for a pitcher to face right-handed batters in Yankee Stadium.
There we go.
Got it.
This reminds me of playing Settlers with your wife and all of us together. I want sheep. Give me sheep.
Who wants to trade for wood? No, I want wood. I don't want you to give me wood. Okay, so after Pineda, who, like I said, to me is not even like he's the very clear-cut favorite here, who else can we look at?
Well, unfortunately, I mean, you asked who's in a better spot. A lot of the good pitchers just aren't in good spots tonight, but two pitchers I think you can look at just for cash game consideration are pitching against each other, and Gerrit Cole and Zach Greinke. The total on this game is a little bit higher. It's 8.5. Neither team is a big favorite, so again, we don't get as much access to the win shares here as we would like. And that's because, you know, we've talked about this before as well, but Arizona is basically a poor man's Coors at this point, giving up a ton of runs there, and, you know, just a very favorable ballpark for hitters to hit in. That being said, you know, we've still had some shutdown performances from pitchers there. It's a little unlike Coors, I think, in that the quality of the air. So in Coors, one of the big issues there is that the thin air actually affects things like how the ball moves as it comes to the plate. So pitchers who rely on movement, like curveball pitchers in particular, but also pitchers that rely on the slider, really, really have a great difficulty pitching there. In Arizona, it's more like the dimensions of the ballpark. So you still will see guys from time to time pile up big strikeout totals. And in this game, you have two pitchers that can pile up big strikeout totals. I will say that for the Greinke side of things, You're kind of serving neither master because he's not exactly an elite K guy. I mean, he's good, don't get me wrong, but Pittsburgh is one of the toughest teams to strike out for right-handed pitchers. On the same coin, Pittsburgh also has a bottom five WOBA against right-handed pitchers, so it's kind of weird because they're a team you want to face when you want a high floor, but kind of being in Arizona mitigates that high floor to some degree. So I'm not sure Greinke's, he's like probably a little bit too risky for cash games and not quite enough upside for big tournaments. So maybe you miss out on him. But I will say, I think Gerrit Cole does have quite a bit of upside for big tournaments here. Arizona, they are unlike the Pirates in that they actually are quite good against right-handed pitching, 337 WOBA, but are striking out at the fifth highest clip in the majors against righties with a 24.3 K percentage. And actually, I talked about this when Max Scherzer went up against them as well. And of course, he had an electric, you know, GPP winning style performance against them with 11 strikeouts. So while I don't think that's, you know, a median performance for Cole here, I think Cole's been good enough, you know, averaging better than six innings pitch per start, almost a K per inning, fewer than two walks per inning. I think that you can land on him for big tournaments. Also, just because there's no clear-cut ace in a good situation. So I think you roll the dice on Cole. Maybe the strikeouts come, and if they do, the win will probably follow, and you just realize all that big potential. So, yeah, it's not a safe thing, but something you can at least consider.
Greinke's a minus 130 favorite going in here. I mean, Arizona is projected for like somewhere in that 4.5 runs. So you're looking at heavy. You could potentially looking at heavy downside to Cole as well.
Oh, it's a huge downside.
You were clear about making it. No. You were clear about making him a tournament play. Greinke, he's like sort of in that. He's too expensive to have this money line be so small is like one of the issues, right? Because if he's going to be up over 10,000 at a minus 130 favorite, you are really cutting down on your win expectation for that price, and that is an actual real problem, I think, for especially that's what's keeping his projection a little bit lower considering how much he costs. And like, we have him for actually a little bit more points than Pineda, but like I said, the price difference is pretty there's such a huge price difference, that's what's causing Pineda to sort of jump to the top over him. It's just simply how much they cost. So Cole, Greinke, I'd probably go lean Greinke more on the cash side of that along with Pineda. Anyone else kind of stand out to you here?
Geez, after that, it's kind of just these upside guys that you kind of have to hope and wish on. You know, JC Ramirez is a guy who's put up pretty good peripheral stats this season. Nice article from Fangraphs over there on, you know, whether or not his transition is kind of for real. I'm tending to think that it's sort of not. He's been very up and down with a couple really electric starts and a couple disasters to go with it. So, I don't know if you want to consider that for cash game purposes. Maybe helps him a little bit that he's coming from the right side of the mound against Detroit. But yeah, if you want a guy who can score you 7 fantasy points or 47, then maybe Ramirez is a guy you consider. But I'm just not seeing really a ton that I love here. I mean, is there someone else tickling your fancy?
I mean, system kind of likes Marco Estrada a little bit against the Mariners. I'm not so in love with that.
You sound pretty pumped about it.
No, this is the all excitement podcast for some of these pitching options today. And he's fine. He's just kind of a guy. He's pretty platoon neutral, so you're not worried about. You're really not as worried about some of the lefty bats there as you would be, and maybe some other cases. Again, not a guy that I'm like I'd be over the moon to play, and I definitely wouldn't put in more of a buy-in just because I knew I was going to get Marco Estrada against the Mariners on the cheap. System, I mean, from a DraftKings starting pitcher two standpoint. System really likes Derek Holland. It's mostly because he's free and he's so cheap right now. Let me look at his price. It's
so cheap right now.
$5,200, and that's less than some bats, you know, going today. Which usually when you have a guy priced in the 5,000 range, it's for a very specific reason. They stink, right? So, and Holland is not good, though he's not horrendous. Like, he's gone 6 innings in I think 4 of his 5 starts this year. On DraftKings, if you can just eat up innings basically at $5,200, then you kind of do have value, right? Like, he'll strike out 7 or 8 per 9, somewhere in that range, maybe 7 per 9, against a Minnesota team that doesn't have a ton of power. So I think from just strictly a starting pitcher too, and you want to fit in the more expensive bats at Coors, he and to a somewhat lesser extent JC Ramirez, because Ramirez is $6,800. Those guys sort of do fit that mold. I wouldn't feel great about it, and it could really look bad, you know, when you're in the second inning and he's already gotten rocked around, you know, one and a half times through the lineup by the Twins. But at $5,200, I think it's just the system seeing that he can eat, you know, 5.5 innings and not get totally destroyed, and that actually probably does make him a value if you want to load up on bats, if that makes sense.
No, it does make sense. I mean, people shouldn't trust the 2 ERA with Holland. This is a horse that we beat all the time, but you know, the peripherals don't exactly line up with that. I will say Holland sort of had the opposite thing to Pineda over the course of his career, in that in spite of a pretty high fly ball percentage, he hasn't given up a ton of home runs. So, you know, I don't know if that continues to translate. He's had some tough home parks over the course of his career, so I tend to think that that actually means more for him than it might for other pitchers. But yeah, I mean, I think as a starting pitcher too, you know, one of the ways you win on DraftKings is finding value at that starting pitcher two slot. With the way the pricing works there, you simply can't just plug an ace into every position. So yeah, I think you get away from that pretty cheaply. Maybe he just pays, like, you know, hitter style value from there, and then you get away taking a more expensive arm and then some good bats. So yeah, I feel better about DraftKings tonight in their pitcher situation than I do on FanDuel, which I think is pretty unusual.
Let's get to hitter stacks in a second. Give us a sponsor real quick, and then we'll get over and talk about some of the bats we can target.
Yeah, right on. Let's talk about NoHalftime.com. Earlier today, you heard me talking about comparing one pitcher to the next, say Cole and Greinke. NoHalftime is a really cool thing because it basically allows you to settle challenges with your friends or with strangers on the internet as far as who's going to outperform whom. So you're at the bar today, you're in Arizona talking baseball the way everyone in Arizona is this time of year. Just can't avoid it. And someone says, "I like this Gerrit Cole coming into pitching tonight." And you say, "Are you crazy? I like Zach Greinke better than him." This is a real conversation probably happening as I speak this.
Most definitely.
So you say, "All right, put your money where your mouth is." You open up the No Halftime app. You put this challenge out into the world. You say, "Zach Greinke, better than Gerrit Cole." Someone else can come along and they can accept it or not. If they don't accept it, you get your money back. If they do, then the challenge is there. Winner take all. Whoever scores more fantasy points wins. So a very straightforward system. Not a huge time investment the way regular DFS can be sometimes. NoHalftime.com. Promo code DFSR25 will get you a $25 bonus on your first $25 deposited. So check it out and we'll see you there.
All right, let's break down some of the hitters today, or just some of the stacks that we can target. It seems to me, I mean, from our system's point of view, it's pretty much there's a top tier of just teams you can target, and then a pretty significant drop-off considering how small the slate is. Start us off talking about Coors, and this is the thing you kind of just have to lead every stacks conversation with whenever there's a game here, and then sort of make the decision about, is it worth to pay the prices on, you know, the price inflation you get on this game that both sites are basically accounting for at this point pretty heavily. Although I've noticed they kind of account for it a little bit harder on the away team side than the home team for whatever reason. But what are your thoughts on Coors here? Two decent pitchers sort of going, but they have the highest implied run totals of the day also. So I'm just not sure how much exposure we want to this game.
Yeah, cut to Tyler Anderson being like, "He called me decent." with his 6.7 ERA, because a lot of people haven't probably called him that this season. But I would call them two kind of mediocre pitchers. I mean, Anderson, I think, is quite a bit worse than Ryu. Ryu's kind of an interesting commodity because, you know, he's one of these pitchers that, I mean, he's 30 years old at this point. He was fairly well hyped when he came over to the U.S., and he's had some pretty good results overall, and then the last two seasons have been pretty tough for him. So, you know, he missed 2015 altogether, came back last year, pitched just four major league innings, and now he's got 26 innings under his belt in 2017. And he cuts the profile of a guy who, you know, a pretty high K per nine, fairly low walks per nine, giving up a lot of home runs. You know, maybe some of that looks unsustainable, but I'm actually a little bit less warm on Ryu than I think you are. I mean, and he's pitching in Coors tonight, so no pitcher is going to be stellar when he's going in Coors, but there's a lot here that I think actually portends pretty badly for him specifically, and primarily it's just his reliance on off-speed stuff and movement-based stuff. So more than 50% of his pitches, about 57% of his pitches, are not fastballs, right? So he's going up there throwing a lot of sliders, a lot of curveballs, a lot of changeups, and that kind of, you know, repertoire just doesn't play that well in Coors to begin with. And then obviously, you know, the more contact you give up, the greater difficulty you're going to have. So I think he'll actually try to rely a little bit more on the fastball tonight. I think he gets rocked. I think Vegas is seeing that as well, with the line on this game being a 10.5 line in spite of him maybe having some pretty decent peripherals. So I do think, yeah, Ryu not looking like, I mean, obviously not a great value, but definitely not someone who's going to scare me off playing any Rockies tonight. And on the Rockies side of the ball, Tyler Anderson, like I mentioned, also just not a guy we're ever going to be scared about. You mentioned the bumps real quick. I want to touch on those before we go on to the next team. I think you're right that the various sites do account for the away team's price a little bit more when they go into Coors. I think that's just because, and I think that they account not enough for when the Rockies leave Coors. I think that's just because when you play half your games there, it just gets so baked into your baseline that, you know, too much movement off the baseline isn't, you know, really required necessarily. Basically just makes the Rockies never plays outside of cores, and then occasional plays in good matchups. So I like both sides of this game for snacks tonight. I think that if you're going to get cheap pitching, the other big, you know, factor in whether we're actually going to consider this game for cash games is whether we have a $10,000 or $11,000 ace that we're going to play. Tonight is not one of those nights, and that puts all these guys in play.
Yeah, you mentioned Anderson's ERA 6.7. His xFIP is 3.92. So he's run pretty bad this year, I would say. Look, I'm not saying you need to pitch the guy. I'm just saying that he's not, I don't think, he's not a bum pitcher by any means. I think he's just a decent pitcher that probably gets a little bit unlucky that he got drafted by the Rockies and has to play there.
No, he's not terrible. I mean, definitely he's not terrible. He's got reasonable control. I mean, he wasn't like an electric prospect coming out of the minors. He's always struggled with, you know, just pitching in these bad Colorado environments. But that's still just where he's pitching tonight, so I don't know. I mean, the high home run to fly ball ratio, again, I think xFIP has a difficult time interpreting that in a place like Coors where just more fly balls turns into home runs, so I don't know. I'm more than happy to play any Dodgers that show up in the optimal lineup tonight.
It's a good point that you made about Ryu's just kind of overall pitching profile just not being the exact opposite thing of what you want to have happen in here. Like, you can get away with pitching in Coors over a period of time. Usually, if you like throw like a heavy fastball that induces ground balls, like, because when you're not going to get your exactly. If you're not going to get the spin that you usually get on some of that off speed stuff, you can really get in trouble quick. And Vegas, I think, has probably sniffed that out a little bit, because while Ryu has shown pretty good numbers this season, the Rockies are still favored here. They have 5.4 ish implied runs, while the Dodgers only have a little more than 5.1. So Vegas likes the Rocky side of it. Our system is calling out more of those guys than the Dodgers side. The other team that it's really kind of honing in on here is the Rangers. The Rangers are an interesting situation here just in terms of price. You're getting the Rangers at 5.2 implied runs we have them at right now, so a little bit less than the Rockies, but pricing at significantly less than the Rockies. And that is just the kind of situation we're looking for, basically, when we're talking about stacking. I can see the Rangers being a pretty popular play tonight, because most people at this point, we were talking about this off the air, most people at this point are modeling baseball. There's only so many ways to model baseball, right? Like, really with every sport, there's only so many ways to sort of skin the cat. But we've really seen it this year where there's been some sort of like smoothing out in terms of even just maybe some of our competitors or just like the average person being able to do it. And you can look at these implied runs and make some pretty good judgments just on the outset of just who's in a good spot. So you get like guys like Napoli coming cheap, and you know, if we get the line of the Shields hitting the top lineup, basically all of the Rangers are coming in under 3,000 on FanDuel, or not all of them. A lot of the Rangers are coming in under 3,000 on FanDuel right now, and they're just facing Clayton Richard in a high implied run total. Do you think that at this point in the good DFS, people are picking up on that more than they would in the past? Like, it's easier to talk yourself out of Coors when you see, you know, good ballpark, decent offensive team, bad opponent in Clayton Richard, and then you get these guys coming pretty cheap.
Yeah, I do think so. I mean, the thing that people are really keying in on, like you mentioned, your Vegas implied totals. I think a lot of people realized their eyeball test of like who's hot recently and, you know, whatever names they recognize wasn't going to cut it in the long run. Name players just tend to become overpriced pretty quickly based on the site's pricing algorithms, and then their huge market inefficiency that is batting order. You know, Keon Broxton batting leadoff last night was a 50% start. Like, that just never would have happened even a year ago, I would say. So people are a lot more aware of these sort of little inefficiencies, and, you know, inefficiencies go away pretty quickly once people become aware of them, because then they're efficiencies, right? So I don't know if FanDuel and DraftKings, if they really care if everyone plays the same players. You know, it definitely has a little bit more of a feel like, say, basketball or football when this happens, as opposed to the baseball mayhem of the past where no one was higher than a 15% start. But yeah, no, I think the Rangers are in a great spot tonight. You do really like the home park, especially as things are starting to warm up a bit. That plays an even greater role there. So I do suspect you'll see a lot of cash game ownership there.
Yeah, Richard really can't strike anybody out. So just you really reduce the K rate for a couple of these guys, which is the other thing you're really looking for. It's as long as you can get, because basically you're just looking for guys coming cheap in good ballparks with a high probability of just putting the ball in play. Of course, you can run bad over the course of a game, even with those that kind of profile stuff going in. But this is, I would say, just about a perfect matchup for a team like the Rangers. We have we don't have it sight facing yet, but we have what we consider to be GPP value, or just overall team value of a team going into a set of games, like with their batting order. I mean, right now we're doing projected batting orders, but once those batting orders come in, it's basically taking points per dollar for an entire entire team rather just on the player level. And right now the Rangers are like the runaway favorites in the system for what the price they're coming in. I take that back. There's them and then one other team I think you wanted to talk about, which is the Blue Jays.
Yeah, so let's talk about the Blue Jays for a second. I'm going to put them aside to start, and I'll get to them in a second. And then I'm going to focus in on Chase DeJong. So Chase DeJong, if you're not familiar with his work, I can't blame you. He was a kind of a prospect with the Blue Jays, came up with the Dodgers system, and then the Mariners eventually picked him up. And he's just kind of a guy. You know, he came up, I think, just to do long relief. And then when things weren't working out, he got plugged into the starting lineup. Now, DeJong, he's only had two starts this season. One was an absolute train wreck against Cleveland, where he gave up six earned runs, struck out just one batter in two and a third innings, and just kind of just got destroyed. And then the other was a pretty solid start against Texas, at least from an earned runs perspective, where he gave up just one run across six innings. And this is going to be, I think, an interesting case study in what to make of young pitchers when they come up, because we generally speaking have two profiles that young pitchers fit into, or let's call it three. One is, we'll call it 1% of the coming up pitcher population. And these are guys who come up right away, kind of like when Pineda came up, maybe Francisco Liriano, where the stuff is just so electric and people don't have enough scouting reports that they just look completely unhittable. Johnny Cueto was this way when he first came up. They just look completely unhittable for five or six starts until people kind of figure them out. There's like the fat part of the bell curve, the Derek Holland types who are just kind of mediocre, just the way they were in the minors. But then there's actually a much bigger percentage, I think, than people realize, of kind of this rare bad category where people come up and then they get like five starts in the majors. You never hear from them again. It's not even names you recognize because they're chased so quickly. And DeJong's first two starts kind of fit that bill. I mean, 4 Ks per nine over 13 innings is absolutely horrendous. I mean, even in the six innings pitched, giving up just or netting just 3 Ks against Texas is pretty poor performance. And the 3.38 walks per nine paid a profile of a guy who actually doesn't really have much control either. So I think that while it's no guarantee that he's like in that rare bad category just yet, there's definitely a chance. Pitching in the Rogers Center is no joke, one of the best hitters parks in the AL. And the Blue Jays, while they've been pretty poor against pitchers of all handedness this year, still do have some names that can barrel up a ball. I mean, you know, we saw just the other night they scored 8 runs against Cleveland, so it's not out of the question that they go off. This is probably, I mean, if there's going to be cheap value, especially towards the top of the lineup, I think you can happily kind of plug it into cash games. But for big tournaments especially, I think with people being more on the Texas, more on the Coors game, since there's cheap pitching, I think you can really scoop up a decent amount of value out of this Blue Jays team, especially if you do it just to fill in the sub $3,000 guys, you know, kind of the odds and ends as you're filling out your lineup.
Yeah, the Blue Jays have a pretty uninspiring lineup when you look at their projected lineup and slash when they actually put out their lineup and look at what, because you really run into a problem with them getting down in the bottom of the order where there's just kind of just totally bum hunting on some of these dudes like Goins and Barney and Chris Coughlin. And I mean, Russell Martin's hurt, so they're having to throw out Luke Mail. But I do like the top of that lineup. Pilar, I wish they would hit Bautista second all the time. They don't always do that. Smoke is kind of up there. So,
We played Stephen Pierce on the odd night. I mean, we were on Pierce on like a 4% ownership the last time we played him, and then he just went out there and clubbed a 3-run homer in the first inning. So sample size, but we nailed it. But yeah, if he winds up trickling up towards the top of the lineup, you know, there's stuff that can happen that you might wind up liking here. So
my great suspicion is that you see, at least for cash game purposes, people basically populating almost all of their lineups between the Coors game, the Rangers, and then maybe a random Toronto guy or two. Because after those teams, the implied run totals for really everybody else is significantly lower. Like those teams are all hovering right around 4.8 and higher. Like the Toronto's the lowest at 4.8, and the other teams I mentioned are all above 5. But after that, you really don't even have another team with more than 4.5 implied runs or something like that. Sure. So there's a pretty steep drop off. And even the ones that you do, like Arizona, they're facing Gerrit Cole. So like, why bother, right? Like you just don't. Maybe Vegas sees them actually being able to put up a run or two, but. You're just not getting away with anything there either. So,
no, you're not, but I think that's actually – Arizona's a really good one to point out for your big tournament purposes. You know, I talked about the Cole side of this where he could just go in there and strike everybody out. On the same token, Arizona could absolutely go in there and just beat up Cole too. You know, Cole's not a 10 Ks per nine guy. Arizona is one of the top teams in the league against right-handed pitching. So that's like the type – and it's a great hitter's park besides. So that's like the type of situation where you could look at a guy like Goldschmidt, who was a hugely owned play last night in both tournaments and cash games. You can actually probably get some separation on him tonight, and I think you can do so profitably. So a team, you're not going to play those guys for your cash games for sure, but I think definitely for big tournaments, I'm going to look at those guys pretty hard.
All right. Maybe this slate became a little more interesting than I thought it would be at the outset. Still not totally in love with it with some of these pitchers, but I do like some of the offense. So probably end up talking myself into some kind of exposure here tonight. DFSR.com/MLB will get you a free 3-day trial to our projection system. That's Optimal Lineups powered by Lineup Lab for both FanDuel and DraftKings. It's free for 3 days, $29.95 a month after that. Includes the last few trickle-in of days of NBA as well. And then it will be all inclusive of football as well when that sport finally comes back in the fall. So free for 3 days, $29.95 a month after that. Think you'll be happy with the service, buddy. Talk to you again tomorrow for full Friday in baseball.
Yeah, tongue twister, Fox and Sun.